Hello and welcome to SOC Unlocked, Tales from the Cybersecurity Frontline. I'm Mick Leach, your host and guide on this exciting adventure into the SOC universe. In each episode, it is my pleasure to chat with various cybersecurity professionals about the latest in industry news, emerging threats, and practical strategies to keep your organization safe, as well as a few other things. And this week, we are excited to have on the podcast, Joe South. Joe, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. This is a fantastic, switch of events, right? Like, you were on Security Unfiltered, and now I'm here on your podcast.
I know. We're just bringing things full circle. So for those listeners that maybe haven't yet found Security Unfiltered, Joe has an excellent podcast called Security Unfiltered, and it was my pleasure to be on that twice now. Thanks for having me back a second time. Apparently, I didn't do too bad a job. He was very kind enough to have me back. And now, when we kicked one off here, Joe was one of the very first people I reached out to and said, Joe, listen, you know, I loved being on your podcast. You got to do me a solid and come back on ours. Would you be willing? And he very kindly agreed.
Yeah, it only took like 2 or 3 months to finally get me on.
Well, you're a busy man, all right? I mean, we all know that. Security professionals, right? Especially practitioners that are in the weeds day in and day out, because you're hooking and jabbing with the bad guys on the daily.
Yeah. Okay? Yeah, quite literally.
Yeah, yes.
And trying to save organizations from themselves.
Well, that's always a part of what we do. In fact, I would argue that's probably a bigger portion of what we do is protecting our organizations from themselves. Well-meaning folks can wreak havoc in every organization that I've come across. So thank you for that. Thanks for all of your efforts. We certainly appreciate it. And welcome to the show.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so as our longtime listeners know, we like to kick this off, learn a little bit more about you. We'll talk a little bit about the past, present, and future of cybersecurity, particularly as it relates to like the operations, engineering, and architecture capabilities. And then we'll get into a little bit of career guidance. And lastly, we'll hear kind of the one last thing. Sound fair?
Sure, yeah.
Awesome. All right. Well, with that, I would love for you to tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you get into cybersecurity? What does your journey look like? And, you know, tell us about what you're doing these days.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I started this journey back when I was getting my bachelor's, right? So when I was getting my bachelor's, I actually got my degree in criminal justice, fully expected and planned on going into the federal agencies, you know, going to like the darkest hole on earth and spending time there, right?
Yeah.
That was my entire intent. And while I was in college, I needed some way to make money for beer money, right? Sure. I mean, when you're in college, you don't have very many expenses. You know, I had to pay for my cell phone and beer, right? And so I ended up getting a job at like the school's help desk and did a couple different IT roles at different like orgs within the university that I was at. And I hated it. I hated every bit of it. I really truly thought to myself, man, if I find myself in IT in 10 or 15 years, like I will have really failed. Like this is so terrible.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. So I went and, you know, graduated, and, you know, the first thing that they tell you is like, hey, student loans are going to come due in 6 months. Like that's when they kick in. And so the quickest way for me to get income was to make a transition into IT, right? And so I continued on in help desk until I got my federal agency dream job, right? And that whole process is like 2 years long. So I can't wait around for 2 years. So I got this help desk job. And again, hated it. You know, I hated every bit of it. I thought it was stupid. I felt like it wasn't challenging me. I didn't like it at all. And one of my coworkers there kind of said, you know, hey, did you ever think about going, you know, down cybersecurity, right? Going towards cybersecurity. Never heard of it. Never really thought about it. Anything like that. You know, you always see these breaches and whatnot. But I never thought like, oh, there's someone, you know, that's trying to prevent that internally, right? Never thought about that. And so I went and picked up this Security Plus book after his recommendation and read it, and I couldn't put it down. Right. So it was very interesting to me because I had the right mentality for it. I have that mentality of like always asking questions, always, you know, inquiring about different things and whatnot. And so I said, okay, well, if I'm going to go down this route, let's make sure that this is the right route, because I don't like wasting time. I don't like going down a path and then finding out it's not for me and having to like start over. Right. So I picked up the Network Plus book, and the only thing that that thing did for me was put me to sleep. I mean, it was incredible how it was able to do this. You know, I still pick it up from time to time if I'm having trouble sleeping. It just knocks me right out. I would literally be working at my job at a help desk role, and I'd be trying to study, you know, in between calls or something. And so I'd open up this book and I'd be sleeping, and my coworker would have to like nudge me like, hey man, you got like a call in 15 minutes. Like, you got to wake up. Like, and I'm like, dude, I can't even like, I can't read this book at work anymore. You know,
I love it.
Yeah. So I never made it past chapter one of Network Plus. So I figured security is probably the route for me.
So listeners, call Joe with your subnetting needs.
Yeah. I'm going to pull up a calculator. That's the first thing I'm going to do. It's crazy. But then it took me from there, it took me 2.5 years to actually get into a security dedicated role. And that included me finagling my way into security roles and security functions at my current company. Really just like trying to, I look back on it and I'm like, man, it's incredible that they didn't fire me, because I very aggressively took over security there without the title of security.
Well, but sometimes that's what it takes, right? I mean, you know, in the military, I was a military guy, in the military, we often talked about, we would rather be punished for our initiative than for, you know, the lack of movement. Right. So I love it. So what happened after that?
Yeah. So it took me 2.5 years to get in. And that's literally 2.5 years of 5 days a week doing interviews. You know, 'cause I was applying to every single role that had security analyst in it. Mm. Right. Like if I remotely qualified for the role, like if I met like 20% of the requirements, I was applying to it. And, you know, literally there would be times when it would be, you know, interviews back to back for a couple hours. Right. And I'm like risking my day job because I wanted to get into security so badly. Mm. You know, looking back on it, I was in a role that I was making $45,000 a year. Mm-hmm. Right. At the end of every month, I was choosing which bills to pay and which bills I could put off for another month. You know, like that was the financial situation that I was in. And I kind of heard, right, that in security, you'd make a lot more money.
Mm-hmm.
I had very little, you know, I guess like upward mobility or growth potential at my current company. And I didn't want to get another help desk role because I felt like that would just be more of the same. You know, that wouldn't be like a step up for me. I personally like to see a lot of progress. And so that's why I focused on getting into security. I figured surely, you know, 1 year of doing this and I'll get my break, right?
Sure.
1 year passed, I didn't get my break. Took it another year, right? And then at that half year mark, you know, I literally said to myself, I mean, I remember this very clearly, right? I had 2 in-person final round interviews for 2 different companies. One was in the suburbs. I lived in like the northern part of Chicago. Mm-hmm. And then one was downtown Chicago. And so one was in the morning, one was in the afternoon. And I literally said to myself, I was like, if I don't get an offer by the end of the day from one of these companies, I'm just going to find something else to do. 'Cause like, obviously this isn't for me, you know, I literally remember, you know, like praying that. And, you know, at the end of the day, literally I got home from my second interview of the day and 30 minutes in, I mean, I literally just got home. 30 minutes in, I get a call from the first place and they gave me an offer. And then like while I was on that call, the second place was calling. So I hung up with them and got the second place and I got an offer from them. I was like, man, wow. This is, and it was, you know, at that time, it was double what I was making. Right. Mm. I was making $45,000 a year, not making anything. And now it's like, oh, like it was such a relief. It was like, oh my God, like there's a way out. Right. Wow. And so that was kind of my start.
That's, well, I mean, what a start. So, you know, the thing that jumps out to me in that journey is that you didn't give up, right? That it did take longer than you expected, longer than certainly you wanted. And so I suspect that a few of our listeners right now are in the midst of that. And so would you have anything to offer? I know we're going to do career, like traditional career guidance kind of towards the end of the podcast, but I mean, there are lots of folks that are struggling, that are frustrated, that are you know, on month three, month four, month nine, of being not where they want to be. Maybe they're out of work entirely. And so, you know, what encouragement would you offer, having been there yourself and seen the other side of it?
Yeah, I would say to not give up, right? Because security is so broad. I mean, back then, security wasn't that broad. It was blue team or red team. There was no purple. There was no in between. It was like for security, you know, you had those two options. And then if you wanted to stay within IT, it was like systems and networking and everything else, right? There were so many different opportunities on that front compared to security. And so now with the broad spectrum of security that we have, it's really important to stay focused, you know, keep yourself motivated, keep on doing those little incremental things every single day. You know, maybe you're working towards getting a cert. Maybe you're working towards getting a little bit more experience with something. And, you know, try to get 1% better every single day. But the most important part is to try and not lose hope, right? Like that's kind of what I was going through, right? 2.5 years in, not getting a single offer, like once, you know, not getting a single offer. And I was losing hope. It's like, okay, you know, this is it for me. This isn't for me, you know? And trying to just give yourself another shot, right? Because all you need is one yes. I mean, I went back in my emails. I got told no 500 times.
Wow.
In those 2.5 years.
Wow.
I couldn't believe it. I got told no 500 times. And I kind of explained it like I was just stupid enough to not understand what no was and kept on trying, right? Like for some reason, no, like doesn't even like work in my brain. It's like, okay, no today or no right now. Like let's figure it out tomorrow, you know?
Yeah. Wow. I mean, but what an encouragement for some of the folks that are listening that either have been there and they can appreciate what you're saying. But also those that are still in that spot, right? You know, 500, if you're at 27 no's, you know, buckle up. I mean, it could get worse. And yes, but there is a yes at the end of this. Don't give up. We'll get there. So you got your yes. In fact, you got two yeses. And you finally got your big break into cybersecurity. Tell me more.
Yeah, that first role was it was really interesting because, you know, in security, when you're not on the vendor side, you constantly have vendors reaching out to you, trying to take you out for lunch and games and, you know, everything else. And that is fantastic. You know, like that's such a shift in culture almost, right? To what you're used to, because in help desk that never happens. If you get invited to a lunch for a help desk, like they're probably like letting you off easy, you know, letting you go and whatnot. Right. So that was a culture shock alone, but then it was also, you know, from the technical side, it was like drinking from a fire hose, you know, like a fire hose on steroids. That's probably the easiest way to put it. And I remember my very first project and my first technology that my manager gave me. I still talk to, you know, that old manager to this day, right? He actually started the Security Unfiltered podcast with me, and then he left due to some reasons and whatnot. But he gave me this technology. I won't name the technology, because I do not like the technology at all to this day.
Fair enough.
But he told me, hey, you know, like in security, you're not going to come across a more complex product than this. He's like, I've seen a lot of different products. This is by far the most complex. If you can learn this, you can learn anything. And you being able to like have this skill set and whatnot will pay dividends in the long run. Like he was talking about, you know, you could do consulting and this and that. I didn't really care about any of that because as soon as he gave it to me, I was more than happy to do it because, you know, that whole time for 2.5 years, I was being told, no, you don't have experience with X technology. Mm-hmm. And so when I started there, it was like, hey, give me everything. I want to own the entire security stack. It doesn't matter what it is.
And they
did that. They gave me it, right? And, you know, through the misery of learning that dreaded technology that I strongly dislike to this day, came opportunities that I never even expected. You know, like companies started to reach out to me for consulting on that technology because apparently no one in the industry really had experience with it. And I'm over here, I'm like the only one that deployed it, which is, I guess, good and bad. You know, like it opens up a lot of doors, but it's also a miserable door.
Sure. Been there.
Yeah.
So cool. And that brings you to, what are you doing? What are you up to these days?
Yeah, now I am the principal cloud security engineer for a large automotive manufacturer.
Awesome.
So that's it's interesting. You know, I didn't like get into security with the goal of cloud security, right? I got into security with the goal of security and then get experience with a broad range of technologies and domains. And then from there, you know, I tried to look 5 to 10 years out and see what is valuable, where is everything going? Because I don't want to be in 5 to 10 years, you know, potentially with a family at that time, right? And be unemployed because I didn't think ahead and didn't plan for that. And so I identified cloud security very early on. I mean, cloud security was not even really a thing. AWS didn't even have their security cert for the cloud. And so I identified that as somewhere I wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I went and eventually through, you know, persistence and not giving up, got my break in cloud security because I had such a broad range of experience. You know, I had the network security experience. I had firewall experience and switch experience. The stuff that would put me to sleep, now we kind of spun it, right? Put that security twist on it. And now I'm immediately interested in, you know, the ins and outs of SSH and Telnet and whatnot, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had the endpoint experience, the IAM. In the cloud, all of those things come together, right? So like you're not, at least right now in the industry, you're not going to your cloud network security guy. It's like, no, you're going to the cloud security guy and he's going to know network security. He's going to know the firewall. He's going to know IAM data encryption. Oh, yep. Man, there's so many different facets of cloud security. It's pretty intense and overwhelming at times.
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. Yeah, you're right. The cloud kind of united everything that for years we all had on-prem. You know, these were physical devices and now they're all, you know, software. So, you know, these are just software changes that can be made. And so it's so much more important that you bring someone in that has that breadth of experience that understands I'm going to open this port, you know, in this service. And suddenly, because without that experience, you can find yourself in a very tenuous place.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, the cloud is, it's interesting because you're going from, you know, like that on-premise infrastructure where if you want to pull the power plug on something, you absolutely can. Like mm-hmm. you can go in there and pull the power on a server. In the cloud, you can't touch it. You're not running the cable, nothing like that. And it's difficult for a lot of people to extrapolate that out. And now I'm getting my PhD in securing satellite infrastructure, right?
Wow.
So that's like taking it up a couple notches from the cloud. It's like, you want to, you know, you want to like run different things or you want to just do an update. You want to just do a a normal update, well, you may not be able to for 24 hours, you know. Oh, there's a zero date. Doesn't really matter. You got to figure it out, you know?
Yeah. Wow. I mean, you're like, I'll see your AWS and I raise you space.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fantastic. So the next part we love to jump into is kind of talking about the past, the present, and the future of cybersecurity here. So in terms of past, it sounds like you've got a wealth of experience across a whole bunch of different roles. Can you tell us about maybe one of the more interesting or challenging cybersecurity threats or attacks that you've come across in your time and how your team responded and just kind of go sort of full story time mode here?
Yeah, sure. So I'll leave the company out, of course. I don't feel like getting sued today.
Me either.
Yeah, that would be a difficult conversation with the wife. Like, hey, I got sued going on this podcast. But, you know, I was leading the privilege access management team at, you know, a fairly large company. If I said their name, literally everyone would know it. And the solution that we owned was something that tied into AD and other account directories and rotated the passwords.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a large amount of these accounts, maybe, you know, 25-ish thousand that were supposed to never rotate because they were service accounts. And we were working through manual rotation of those accounts, you know, kind of one by one, because it's all very unique for each application and function and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And we had recently performed an upgrade on this solution. And, you know, in my own preparation for this, you know, I was working with my account manager, and the account manager constantly told us there's no hot fixes that you have to run after you do the upgrade. There's no, you know, issues that you have to fix or look out for or anything like that. This thing has been in the wild for, you know, a month or 45 days. And, you know, if anything pops up, I'll tell you about it and whatnot. Because I take it from a customer obsessed approach, right? Even when I'm internal at an organization, my customer is my fellow employees. Mm-hmm. My customer is all the people that are using this solution. And so I'm very obsessed about, you know, uptime and availability and scalability and how quickly they can use it and access it, all that sort of stuff. So anything that would bring down my solution is not like, it's not something that I look over, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we ran this upgrade. The upgrade went terrible. I mean, it was probably the worst upgrade that you could possibly like ever think of. This 2-hour upgrade it was supposed to be 2 hours on a Saturday with all the testing and everything else like that, turned into a, I think it was 18-hour upgrade.
Oh, right. So goodness.
We worked for 12 hours and then it got to a semi-stable state, and we worked the next day for another 6-ish hours, you know, on Sunday. So Monday comes around and the solution is up, it's running, it's doing its thing. And I just got back from lunch, literally just sat down at my desk, logged in, and I saw a little prompt come up, you know, from Windows saying, oh, your password changed, you know, log out, log back in with your new password. I thought nothing of it because I was actually at like that 90-day rotation point. So it was very feasible that my password would have changed. I figured the text was wrong, you know, because obviously my password didn't change. I just logged in with my password, right? Mm-hmm. So I figured it was wrong. I figured it was literally time for me to change my password. So I log out, log back in, and I can't log back in. There's no prompt for, you know, put in your old password and here's the new one and everything else like that.
Uh-oh.
So I was like, okay, well, that's weird. You know, let me go over to like my global SOC, which is, you know, a 2-second walk away. And it was a very impressive room. There's a giant room as big as you can, you know, think of for a SOC that has a wall of nothing but TVs. And then mm-hmm. you have 200, 250 people in desks, you know, doing wow. different tasks and whatnot. So being more senior, I could walk in there and I can, you know, shift whosever priorities I needed for that day. Right. Mm-hmm. Which the managers did not like because they like didn't really own their employees' time. But I had that leverage or that leeway to do that. So I walked over to one of my team's specific SOC employees, and I just said, hey, it says my password changed or something. You know, can you just like rotate it real quick or let me change it, you know, and I'll get back in real quick. And she said, yeah, of course, you know. And so she went ahead and, you know, changed my password. I put in the new password and whatnot. And I was like, oh, you know, how's it going? And she's like, oh, it's fine. You know, a new ticket came in for someone's password to change, or they didn't have access. And so I went ahead and just changed the password in there and resynced it with AD. That was what we had to do. Mm-hmm. It was a very normal task. I mean, we do that, you know, constantly throughout the day, every single day.
Sure.
Right. Because that's a fix for like a very well-known issue. Passwords just get out of sync. It's a very large database, so there's going to be sync issues at times. And so we went into our solution that we own, the Privileged Access Management solution, and we saw all of the accounts had been rotated all at the same time. And we're like, well, that's unlikely, not right. Unfeasible, but it's unlikely. And so we pulled up like a critical account, you know, because like we, you know, out of like 25,000 accounts, you know, about 15 or 20 of them, you know, you can name them right off the bat, right? So we pulled up a couple of those, and those were in queue to be updated. And, you know, this is 1 p.m. Literally just got back from lunch. I was at lunch with my director, right? Wow. And we, you know, we were having a good time. And we both looked at each other, and it was like we were just pale. It was like, oh no, because we both knew what happened, right? Something mm-hmm. broke in the update that we didn't know about.
Right.
We were not told about
all the passwords.
Yeah, it did not accept the database filter. So when you select a single account, you know, it's normal. It's a normal task, right? You're looking for a certain account to change their password, to resync it with AD so that they can log in. You select that account, you filter it, you select that account. On the back end, the database does not see the filter, and it sees when you select something that you select everything. So it literally starts rotating everything.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So thankfully, we have about 45-ish thousand accounts in this database, and their queue does 15 a second. Right. So it's a small number, but it's every second. And so it starts inching through this queue. And so I literally had to tell her, I was like, go grab this conference room, get all of our team in there right now. I need to go tell like management what just happened.
Yeah.
And I literally had to go and tell the managers and tell very specific people in the organization, you are not allowed to log out of your computer. I don't mm-hmm. care what you do the rest of the day. You're not allowed to log off, because the reason why I had to do that is because we had a legacy AD infrastructure. So we had a global AD that pretty much no one knew about except for three or four people.
Right.
There was literally 10 accounts in there. I had just onboarded the global AD accounts into this solution. And I actually brought it up to my manager. I was like, hey, this is probably a bad idea. I mean, what if something like were to break? And he goes, it's not going to break. We're just going to set it as never rotate. Oh,
that's the kiss of death.
And it was only 12 accounts, you know, so it's very easy for me to do it because I have that experience that my prior manager, you know, told me that it would be very valuable someday. And so I just put them in. I mean, I think it was like a couple days before the upgrade. I just put them in, you know, because it was like, it was dealing with like my own project goals and whatnot. And so they're in there. And so I had to tell a few very select people like, hey, you know, this is what's going on. You're not allowed to log off. We have to ensure that we have control over global AD, because in Microsoft AD architecture, if you don't understand what that is, there's a global AD and then there's AD for everyone else. Global AD runs the AD for everyone else. And if you lose access to global AD, you automatically lose access to everything else.
Wow.
And so we were quite literally three accounts away from losing access to our environment completely and having to call Microsoft and saying, hey, do you guys still have a golden ticket by chance?
Oh my gosh. What a crazy series of events.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. That was my life for the next 48 hours because we had to then, and I didn't know that we had this at the time, right? We had a password interceptor in the environment. So it would intercept every password and keep just a log of what that password was and the hash and whatnot. Just for it was for another solution that wasn't really related. But it was there as a just in case, the architect that thought through this design was just we're technically paying for it through our subscription. We'll just deploy it. It'll probably never come in need or anything. And there was literally two people that knew about it at the organization.
Goodness.
And it just so happened that one of those people were one of the key people that I pulled into, you know, that conference room to say, hey, this is what happened. We need to somehow set these passwords back to their old password. And so we had to create a playbook on the fly of, okay, well, how do we, we had to essentially reverse engineer these passwords that were supposed to be secured with hashes, right? And go through that whole process. That process alone took something 8 or 10 hours to script out, right? And then let's not even include testing. And then let's not include breaking the hashes. So we literally had to hack our own environment.
Oh my gosh.
And get us back in, all while, you know, there's a political battle going on internally at the organization. So there's a red team at the organization that wants to consume everything that the blue team is doing and take it under their ownership. And so if they caught wind of this, you know, they would immediately say, oh, well, we're going to beat them to the punch and we're going to break all these hashes then and, you know, take a little bit of ownership of this thing. So it was extremely stressful. And then, you know, the following morning, of course, on the call with the vendor, and, you know, I pulled up the 15 emails that I sent to them saying, hey, is there a patch or a hot fix that you would like me to deploy on day one so that we can avoid an outage? You know, me literally saying that to them and them telling, no, there's nothing. It's a perfect update, perfect piece of software.
Oh my gosh. And so how did that play out then?
It was tough, you know, because as a customer obsessed person, right, I did a lot of work. I did a lot of, I guess, groundwork, right, with the rest of the organization trying to build their confidence in this solution. Because the things that we were trying to do with this solution were very ambitious. I mean, no other customer for this vendor had, you know, the goals outlined or had deployed it in their environment as widely as we planned on doing it. And so I would need the buy-in from the business. So when this happened and word got out that it had, you know, rotated everyone's passwords from an action that is literally done every single day, multiple times a day, you know, everyone kind of lost trust. And so sure. I immediately had to go into, you know, that customer obsession of, you know, kind of siding with the business, siding with the organization and saying, yeah, you know, we messed up. We didn't do something right. We adjusted the plan. We adjusted course. We have controls in place now that, you know, should catch something like this, you know. And I went about actually creating something like a 250-step testing procedure, right, where when we deploy this new software version into our lab environment, the lab has to meet certain requirements, right? It has to be managing a certain amount of accounts. Even if those accounts don't control anything, it has to be managing all these different accounts. And then you have to go through this 250, you know, step testing process. Is everything that you can do within the tool, it all has to be tested and vetted. And it takes, you know, about a month and a half for anyone to just go through and ensure that it works. And you have to sign your name next to each item, right? So you have to understand what you're signing your name to, because if you miss one and it breaks and it's, you know, not what was claimed to be, there's going to be repercussions for it. So yeah. It was an interesting time, really taught me a lot in incident response and I guess, was it public scrutiny or public relations, you know?
Sure. Sure. Well, and you bring up a good point, right? Trust is hard to build and is broken very quickly and easily.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's where, you know, to your point, there's value in transparency. You know, you look at a major EDR vendor had an issue not long ago. And I would argue that their CISO had come out. Their CEO put a bunch of stuff out and it was good. Their CISO came out and I thought gave an absolute masterclass in ownership.
Yeah.
And if you haven't seen that, you can find it easily. It's out there in the interwebs. But there was a post from that CISO that said, basically just taking complete ownership. We messed up. We owe you more and we'll do better. And there were no excuses. It was just pure ownership of the problem and then a commitment to doing better going forward. And frankly, as a customer, you can't ask for much more than that from your vendors, right? I don't want to hear excuses, but just tell me that you dropped the ball and how you're going to fix it. And I know here at Abnormal where I work, that is a key facet of our, you know, leadership strategy is that level of intellectual honesty and customer obsession.
Yeah. I mean, I even, you know, a couple of years ago, I read the Extreme Ownership book by Jocko Willink. Right. And it kind of
excellent book.
It kind of restructured or reframed leadership to me. Right. Because a lot of the times it's very easy for people in leadership positions to put the blame on your team and then also, you know, take all of the congratulatory, you know, talk and praise when things go right. And really, you know, that book kind of flips everything, you know, on its head, right? Like you're no longer you know, accepting the reward of your team's work. You're directing it all straight to them. And if they do something wrong, it's on you, right? Because you communicated improperly. You didn't communicate the importance of this. You didn't set standards and guidelines. There's a million things that you could have not done that would have prevented it. And it's at the end of the day, it all rolls up, right? Like you're either going to get all the blame or you're going to get all the praise.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. I've heard that, that leaders, it's also ingrained in us in the military, right? Is that leaders are accountable for everything that happens in their area, right? Everything that they're responsible for. And they should take ownership of all of that in terms of the challenges. When it goes wrong, it's your fault. When it goes right, it's your team's success, right? So you point and you share, you know, the kudos, the congratulatory stuff with the team at large, and then you own the things that went badly. So
yeah.
Agreed wholeheartedly. So that's a lot about the past and a crazy story that I'm glad I didn't have to suffer through, but I'm sorry that you did. What about today? You know, what do you think, in your opinion, is the biggest sort of threat facing security operations today?
That's a good question. You know, I think it's more because now we have a very cloud-centric approach to everything. And the risk is much more internal now. You know, it's not just social engineering, like, you know, a lot of people used to think what insider threat was and whatnot. It's literal misconfiguration of things.
Yes.
You know, you think that it's right. You think that it's okay for you to do. And it's misconfigured. And, you know, now we have a breach, right? Now we have a huge, giant issue. The cloud is really great. One of the things that it does really good is it makes it very easy for you to deploy a very large amount of infrastructure. And maybe its biggest downfall is also that you can deploy a lot of infrastructure really easily, right?
Yes.
Because you don't have to have separation and segregation in your network between billing accounts, between, you know, different infrastructure and whatnot, right? You don't have to have that because there's nothing keeping you from deploying it if you don't have it, right? So a lot of the times these organizations, they'll say, okay, we're going into, you know, name your big three cloud provider. And the developers immediately somehow come up with a company card and they start billing it to that company credit card and they're deploying things in there, you know, that you don't know about, that you've never even heard of. I worked for a company where I interviewed and they said, we're 100% AWS. You know, yeah, we have some on-prem stuff, but, you know, AWS is our only cloud provider. I get there maybe six-ish months in. You know, you hear about having a footprint in Azure, but it's only AD accounts, right? Like right. Everyone else in the world, it's only AD.
Just Azure AD.
And then you start talking to the right people or maybe the wrong people, and they tell you, oh, yeah, we deployed this production app in Azure. It's using blob storage. It's doing this. And I'm sitting here, you know, you want to say that again, potentially, you know? And they're like, oh, yeah, we're talking about using, you know, GCP in a couple months here. And then you talk to some other people and they'll tell you, oh, we're already in GCP. What are they talking about? Like, we have this app that's running out of GCP and it talks to AWS and it does all these things. And I'm sitting here. So I'm a team of two doing cloud security at this organization, and we are in three clouds. That is literally learning three languages. You know, and two of them are all at the same time. It's like, you know, us speaking English and now we're going to throw in Chinese and German, and you have to learn those two at the same time, two completely different languages in every way.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Fair point. I mean, it feels like every organization that I've ever been to, shadow IT has been a problem. Now, historically, that wasn't that big of a problem because, yes, they would buy things and install it, but you're talking about installing it on on-prem infrastructure, right? They still had to come to you. Maybe they're running it on a, you know, a laptop or something under their desk that they try and turn into a server. I've seen that. But most of the time, they still have to eventually come to you and be like, look, I need a server so that I can install the stuff I bought. And you're like, okay, well, let's put it through, you know, third party risk, and let's give it a look. But today, you know, anybody can spin up our infrastructure in the cloud so quickly, and now they don't have that gate that they have to pass through, and so, you know, shadow IT has become just a much bigger problem these days.
Yeah. And sometimes those gates that we think are in place are not really in place, right? at one of the roles that I was at, you know, I was told, oh, you can't, you know, push anything to public internet. It can't have direct internet access or anything like that. You're not able to deploy a Kali Linux VM into the environment. It's not allowed, and all of these different things, right? And me, you know, having the security mind that I do, when someone says I can't do something or won't be able to do it, I'm like, well, let's give it a try, you know? And sure enough, here we go. I have a public Kali Linux VM, two things that they said I should never be able to do. The alarms went off, right? But I still had it. Mm-hmm. I still had it in the environment, and people were saying I couldn't do it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a big difference between detect and prevent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. So looking forward, though, if we're going to put our future glasses on, you know, what do you think is coming down the pike, if you will? Where's, you know, cybersecurity operations headed, and what are the kinds of things we need to be on the watch for?
Yeah. So those are great questions. And I think it's probably a three-part question, right? I see cloud security turning into, you know, what legacy security was, right? Where you have a cloud network security team, you have a cloud data security team, and so on. Because these domains are getting so large that one person cannot know every single thing in these clouds. Mm-hmm. You know, last year alone, AWS added over 100 new services to AWS. Which boggles my mind as to how anyone could even think about keeping up, right? I mean, that is just absurd.
Yeah.
And they're all tying together. They're all talking to each other. They all have their own subset of services that have their own subset of security controls and things that you have to be aware of and whatnot. It's an insane, size of a potential network, you know, or a potential environment, right? So I think cloud security is going to get, you know, broken up into the different respective domains. And then we're going to see it's probably an easy answer, right? But we're going to see a very large focus on AI security and what to do with AI. Because now every company is using, you know, AI to some extent, not just in their, you know, security solutions that they bought that had that slogan of, oh, next gen AI or whatever it is, right? We're actually working with putting real data into AI and getting an output. And what does that AI do with that real data once we put it in there, right? And then the third part, which is why I'm getting my PhD in it, I think the next war front or battleground will be in satellites, right? Because the next major war, you have to think about what it would take to actually get the upper hand on a nation state, on a country. What's the very first things I'm going to do? I'm going to intercept all the connections and I'm going to limit their GPS capabilities. Mm-hmm. Why would I not do that? Right. We're trying to win here, right? You don't go to war to lose, you go to war to win. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's the next frontier, the next battleground that some people are starting to wake up to. I mean, like there's literally maybe 25 of us, right, that I know of that are actually focused on satellite security and saying, wait a minute, you guys don't have standards? Like they don't have standards up there. I was talking to someone in the Space Force and he was saying, yeah, I've done satellite stuff for 23 years and you could do your PhD on the standards that we should have on satellites because we don't have it.
Wow. That's not a little bit terrifying.
Yeah, it's because they assume that it's so difficult to reach it. There's no way that you're going to unintentionally reach it or intentionally reach it through other means. When me and a couple other hackers at DEF CON are sitting here, like, I have this antenna extender. I can literally just point at your satellite and time it right, and I'll get in.
Right. Yes.
That's what you do.
To your point earlier about tell me something I can't do. And I'll show you something I can do, right?
Yeah,
I mean, that's the hacker community summed up in a phrase.
Yeah, you know, I read an article not too long ago. I think it was DEF CON, not this year, but it was like DEF CON 2023 or maybe 2022, where a general was challenged in the military, right, to have an F-35 hacked. And he said it was unhackable. There's no way. It goes through so much R&D and everything else like that. And someone said, well, why don't, you know, DEF CON is around the corner. You have a very large military base close to DEF CON. Why don't we just take these hackers out on a helicopter to this military base, walk them into this hangar where the jet is. They're not allowed to touch it. They can, you know, not go closer than 10 feet and see what they can do. And the hackers were not only able to take over flight controls, radar, the GPS, it was able to take over the weapon systems and launch weapons and things of that nature. And, you know, they had very strict guidelines around that, right? So it was essentially like when you get to a point where you're in the weapon system, right, you show us theoretically what you could do from here, but you're not allowed to go any farther, right?
Right.
And I mean, these hackers, you know, they said that they got it done in something like 5 hours. Five hours they were able to do all of that. Right. And the general was completely blown away. Completely blown away. He was like, I didn't even think that this was possible. Like, this never crossed my radar.
That's crazy. Crazy. Well, jumping ahead, we're kind of running short on time here, running long on time, I suppose. But, career guidance. If somebody's saying, listen, Joe, I want to get into cybersecurity, and maybe I don't have, I'm not working on my PhD, towards my PhD in satellite communications or security. What would you recommend? Where do they start? What's the best way to get in?
Yeah, the best way, honestly, is, you're going to have a robust home lab, right? And you need to go and pick up some security books, right? You look behind me, this entire bookcase is nothing but security books. I've spent an embarrassing amount of money on books, just on cybersecurity books, and literally go through them. Mm-hmm. I went through and I went and set up a whole, security lab, and then I went and bought a reverse engineering malware book, right? And started figuring out, and I actually got access to a malware database that has every strand of malware that you could think of, right? Just ready to go right there. And they literally tell you, like, what you do with it is not up to us, it's on you.
Right.
They have Stuxnet in there and everything. And I start putting it through and learning the different IDA Pro, steps and capabilities that you can step through a piece of malware like that, right? But taking that same mentality, and you don't have to go as deep as malware engineering, right? Mm-hmm. You can go with, vulnerability management. How do I actually patch it? How do I patch something that is supposed to have high availability without it going down, right? Mm-hmm. Like, let's make sure that this thing never goes down. And in that lab, you're gonna destroy it. You're gonna blow it up so many times, many more times than you're willing to admit. But you're gonna learn a lot every time you do it. And so, approaching it from that front and gaining certifications along the way, things like Security Plus. I would never recommend anyone get the CEH, but you need to know all of the information that they have in that book.
Mm-hmm.
And building your career in steps like that, learning the cloud, right? Every cloud provider has a cloud foundations certification for their cloud. You should absolutely have all three of those. There's no reason not to. It is literally three different languages. They're all at the same difficulty level. So if you get the AWS foundation cert, you can probably go get the GCP foundation cert and the Azure one. It's just a language barrier. It's learning the verbiage. And those things together will get you in the front door at any company. You will at least talk to someone that could make a decision that'll get you in.
That's awesome. Great advice. Getting into that home lab, getting the books, rolling up your sleeves and giving it a try. So awesome. Joe, if someone can only take away one thing from this wide-ranging conversation that we've had, what would you have that be? What would you have them walk away knowing?
I would say maybe two quick things, right? Never give up and never stop asking questions. Because as soon as you stop asking questions in security, that's when you really start to fall along, with everyone else, right? Like, you don't want to be like everyone else in security. You want to be your own unique self with your own unique skill set and, focuses and whatnot. And that's how you build that, is asking those questions and continuously asking.
I love it. I love it. Don't give up. Be curious. Awesome. Yeah. Joe, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. This has been a fantastic conversation. So thank you again.
Yeah, absolutely. I really appreciate you having me on, and more than happy to come back on whenever you want me.
Hey, stay close to the phone. Yeah. We'll reach out. Folks, this has been SOC Unlocked, Tales from the Cybersecurity Frontline. I'm your host, Mick Leach, reminding all you cyber defenders out there to keep fighting the good fight. You're the tip of the spear, so stay sharp. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget to like and subscribe and check out our other SOC Unlocked episodes, as well as Joe's podcast, Security Unfiltered. You guys can find that in all the same areas. He's also on YouTube as well. And with that, folks, we will see you next time. Thank you.